and the Jebusites. So God would be with them. He would drive out these people, and he would bring Israel into their land. Well, who are all these people that are listed here? Where'd they come from? And what relevance does it have on what's going on today around us? Now, there are many tribes that are mentioned here, many peoples, but we're going to focus on one of them today. And the title of the sermon is, Who Are the Jebusites? Who are they? You know, after Israel came into the land and they destroyed Jericho and later Ai, notice who came against them. This is in Joshua 9, verse 1 and 2. Joshua 9, verse 1 and 2. We're going to be looking at a lot of history today that the Bible reveals. But Joshua 9, verse 1 and 2, it came to pass when all the kings were on this side of the Jordan, the hills and the lowland, and in the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite, Amorite, Canaanite, Perizzite, Hivite, and the Jebusite heard about it, they gathered together to fight with Joshua and Israel with one accord. So they got together to fight against Israel. A great army was formed. Guess who led the attack? Chapter 10, verse 1. It came to pass when Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and his king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, one of the royal cities, because it was greater than Ai, and all of its men were mighty. Therefore, Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, and all these other kings, saying, Come up with me, help me, that we may attack Gibeon, for it's made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, and all these other kings gathered together and went up with their armies and camped before Gibeon and made war against it. Now, notice who led the attack. It was the king of Jerusalem, Adoni-Zedek. Now, verse 8. The Lord said to Joshua, Do not fear them. I have delivered them into your hand, and not a man of them shall stand before you. Joshua, therefore, came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. So they came upon them after marching 20 miles. That was the distance between where this army was and where they were in Gilgal, about 20 miles. And the road ascended upward to this point. So it was a difficult trek. And notice how God intervened to help Israel. The Lord, verse 10, routed them before Israel, killed them with a great slaughter, chased them from along the road, and struck them down as far as those cities were concerned. Verse 11, it happened as they fled before Israel, and then on the descent of Beth Horon, the Lord cast down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Azek, and they died. There's more children who died from the hailstones than from the children of Israel killed with the sword. So God killed more of them with the hail than what Israel had done. And this was within 2 to 3 miles of Gibeon that God brought down these huge hailstones upon them. It was at this battle that God listened to Joshua and did something that has never been done before in the history of man. Verse 12. Joshua spoke to the Lord in that day, in the day, when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. He said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still, the moon stopped, so the people had revenge upon their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jasher? Now, we don't have the book of Jasher. But this was a historical event that occurred, And the sun stood still in the midst of heaven. Didn't hasten to go down for about a whole day. There's been no day like it, before it or after it, that the man heeded the voice of a man and the Lord fought for Israel. Think of the tremendous forces in play that had to be altered, like gravity and centrifugal force. I mean, when God stopped everything, you know, the people didn't fly off the earth. They were still there. And yet, the sun didn't set. In other words, the earth did not rotate. Everything stayed the same. Now, notice this over here in verse 24. It was when they brought out the kings to Joshua that Joshua called for the men of Israel and said to the captains of men, "Come near, put your feet on the necks of these kings." And they did so. They put their feet on their necks. And Joshua said, "Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus the Lord will do to all your enemies whom you fight." And afterward, Joshua struck them and killed them and hung them on a tree. Now, this is what he did to those kings. Now, there was symbolic. It was symbolic to put your feet on the necks of the kings. It showed superiority. It showed a sign of triumph and victory. And Israel was told to have courage. And this was great encouragement to Israel. They took these kings and they killed these kings. And they were victorious. But the neighbors did not like what took place. Notice chapter 11, verse 1. Came to pass, when Jabin, the king of Hazor, heard these things, that he sent to Jobab, the king of Medan, the king of Simron, the king of Ekshra, these are other kings, so the kings who were with him in the north in the mountains, the plain south of Chinoth, all these are geographic areas. And notice verse 3, to the Canaanites in the east and the west, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Jebusite in the mountains. So here's another group of nations that were gathered together. They went out, they and all their armies with them, as many people as the sand of the seashore in multitude. This was a massive army after they saw what had happened to the other army. God once again promised that he would defeat them. He said to Joshua in verse 6, "Don't be afraid of them. Tomorrow at this time I'll deliver them before Israel. And you shall hamstring their horses and burn their chariots with fire." In other words, they weren't going to be able to use their horses or chariots in any more further battles. Joshua and all the people of the war came against them suddenly by the waters of Merom, and they attacked them. Of course, the Lord delivered them. And you see that he actually took their land. They attacked them until they left none of them remaining in verse 8, the end of verse 8. That was verse 23 of the same chapter. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had said to Moses. Joshua gave it to them as an inheritance according to the division of their tribes, and the land rested from war. So what you have is Israel, under the guidance of God, going into the promised land, and these kings and these people are being killed and replaced by the Israelites in this land. If you read through chapter 12, you see the lists of the kings that were killed during that time. And then the next few chapters discuss the territory that was given to each of the tribes of Israel. But notice a statement concerning the boundaries of Judah. Joshua 15, verse 1. Joshua 15 and verse 1. So this was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah according to their families. And then what you have from verse 1 all the way through verse 12 are the borders of Judah. So it's very clear what the boundaries were of Judah. Notice verse 8. And the border went up by the valley of Son of Hinnom to the southern slope of the Jebusite city, which is Jerusalem. We read earlier that a lot of these kings were killed, all these armies and battles had taken place, and yet there was still a Jebusite city. It's called Jerusalem. The border went to the top of the mountain, etc. All right. Why is it still a Jebusite city? The answer is in verse 63. It's for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah, could not drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. Now, even to this day, when this was written, this was many, many years after the conquest of the land, and they're still there. Still there in the city, still there even to the time of David. They weren't removed. Who are these people? Who are they? Let's get a little background. We'll come back into Judges in a moment. We were in Joshua. We'll be going into Judges. But let's go to Genesis 10 and verse 6. Let's get a little background here. Genesis 10 and verse 6. The sons of Ham were Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. Now notice that Canaan was the youngest son of Ham. Okay, in verse 15, Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite. So they're all from Canaan, the Jebusite. It's a Canaanite and a Sidonite. So, you know, well, actually, Jebusite was one of the sons of Canaan. All right. And you see that in verse 18, the families of the Canaanites were dispersed. And that's where they ended up, in the area that was the promised land. And God brought Israel into that promised land. And that's where these Canaanites had dwelt. All right, let's go to Genesis 9, verse 24. Canaan did something awful to his grandfather. And it says in verse 24, he woke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done. And the younger son was the youngest son, it was the youngest son of Ham. Ham was not the youngest son of Noah, but it was the younger son of Ham. That's why he said, cursed be Canaan. Notice this. This was a curse on Canaan. A servant of servants he shall be to his brothers, his brethren. He said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. So in both places, with both of the other brothers, Shem and Japheth, they would be larger than Canaan, and Canaan would serve them. The curse that was given at this particular time. And then notice what God had commanded Israel to do. So what you have is these Canaanites who were in the land. Israel came in. They were being displaced. Now notice in Deuteronomy 7, verse 1. Deuteronomy 7, verse 1, this is what Israel was supposed to do when they came into the land. Deuteronomy 7, verse 1. When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess, and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, Canaanites, and notice the Jebusites there, seven nations greater and mightier than you. They were mighty nations, mightier than Israel. And when the Lord God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them, utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them, nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. And the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. But this is what you shall do. Destroy their altars, break down their sacred pillars, cut down their wooden images, burn their carved images with fire. Because you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. This is very specific. There's no wiggle room here. God gave specific instructions for Israel. So, when we see that the Bible reveals that the Jebusites were still around, then those living in and around Jerusalem in particular are going to have some problems. They're going to have some difficulties. So let's continue the story, the historic account. Let's look at Judges 1, verse 8. Now we'll go into the book of Judges here. Judges 1, verse 8. Now the children of Judah fought against Jerusalem and took it. They struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And afterward, the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who dwelt in the mountains in the south and in the lowland. Okay, so they did come in. They did take it over. However, let's notice a little bit more. In verse 10, Judah went against the Canaanites who dwelt in Hebron. Of course, then they went and killed all these other people and these other tribes. Here it looks like Judah fulfilled the command. But verse 21 mentions something else. The children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who inhabited Jerusalem. So the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. So not only did you see this mentioned in Joshua, you also see this mentioned in Judges. And even though the Judah came in and took over Jerusalem, not all the Jebusites were removed. Not all the Jebusites were killed. Now, Benjamin and Judah always stayed together. Judah was the surety for Benjamin way back in Egypt. From the very beginning of the inheritance of the promised land, different cultures, the culture of Canaan, inhabited Jerusalem. In fact, Israel did exactly what God said not to do. And you find this in chapter 3, Judges 3, verse 5. Judges 3 and verse 5. The children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites. They're still there. Even though all these battles had taken place and there were so many that were killed, you still have remnants of these people alive, including the Jebusites. And notice what they did in verse 6. They took their daughters to be their wives and gave their daughters to their sons, and they served their gods. So the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God. They served the Baals and the Asherahs, and therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into slavery. And that happened throughout the period of the Judges. Even by the end of the Judges, you find the Jebusites still in the area. Notice Judges 19. Judges 19, verse 1. Judges 19 and verse 1. Now, this is a horrific story when you read the entire chapter, but notice that it came to pass in Judges 19 verse 1 that there was no king in Israel, and there was a certain Levite staying in the remote mountains of Ephraim, and he took for himself a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. But of course, this concubine played the harlot against him, so you know, she wasn't really a faithful wife to this Levite. But notice verse 10. The man was not willing to spend that night. He arose and departed, and he came to Jabez, which is Jerusalem. With him were the two saddled donkeys, his concubine. They were near Jabez, and the day was far spent. And the servant said to his master, "Come, let's turn aside into the city of the Jebusites and lodge in it." So even it was known, I don't know, how many years after the time that Judges was first written, how many judges were there, and they ruled for 40 years and 20 years and 40 years and another 20 years. It could be a couple hundred years later. They're still there. They're still in this area. It was even known as the city of the Jebusites. Let's stay there. His master said, "No, we won't go into there. We will go on to Gibeah." Notice 2 Samuel 5. 2 Samuel 5. King David comes along. Chapter 4. 2 Samuel 5, beginning in verse 4. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. And it says he reigned in Judah 7 years and 6 months. In Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years. The king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites. So the Jebusites were still inhabiting Jerusalem. The inhabitants of the land who spoke to David, saying, "You shall not come in here, but the blind and the lame will repel you," thinking David cannot come in here. The Jebusites had the gall to tell David, now he's king, that you're not going to be able to come in here. Our blind and our lame will repel you. That's how strong we are. It was, you know, pride and bragging. And it was a slam against David. Nevertheless, David took stronghold of Zion. That's the city of David. Now, David said on that day, "Whoever climbs up by the way of the water shaft and defeats the Jebusites, the lame and blind," notice that's in a parenthetical statement, showing that they think that the lame and the blind are going to, you know, repel me, "he will be chief and captain." Therefore, they said, "The blind and the lame shall not come into the house." And David dwelt in a stronghold and called it the city of David. David built all around the Milo and inward. So you have then, at this point, David becoming great. In verse 10, the Lord of hosts was with him. Joab became the captain of the army as a result of what he did in this battle. The question is, were they killed off? Were the Jebusites all killed off? Now, David took the territory. It became the city of David. Let's look at the answer to that in 1 Chronicles 21. 1 Chronicles 21. And let's look at verse 1. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. This is toward the end of David's life. "And Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel." Satan was the one who put in David's mind, "You go out and take a census of Israel." It was Satan that did that. And of course, we know that that was something he should not have done. And so God gives him a choice what the consequence was going to be. And David, of course, said, I'll fall into the hands of God. So God sent a plague. He sent an angel to destroy Jerusalem. Verse 15. And as he was destroying, the Lord looked and relented of the disaster and said to the angel who was destroying, "It is enough. Now restrain your hand." The angel of the Lord stood by the threshing floor of Ornan, the Jebusite. Interesting. You have a man, a Jebusite, who's outside the city of Jerusalem, who has property in Israel at this time. He's a Jebusite. And yet God stops right there at that man's property. And then, of course, you read the rest of the story and you see that David actually bought his land, this Jebusite's land, to build an altar to God. So how many Jebusites existed and they continued to exist in and around Jerusalem? How many of them gave up their ways and their customs? It seems like this particular Jebusite did because he honored David. He recognized who David was. But how many others did not? And then how many Jews at that time, those in Jerusalem and Judah, how many of them followed the Jebusite thinking, the Canaanite thinking? Even after David's time, the Jebusites still existed. 2 Chronicles. Let's look at 2 Chronicles 8. In verse 7, this was during the time of Solomon, when Solomon was building the temple. 2 Chronicles 8, verse 7. All the people who were left of the Hittites, etc., and the Jebusites who were not of Israel, that is, their descendants who were left in the land after them, whom the children of Israel did not destroy, from these Solomon raised forced labor, as it is to this day. When Chronicles was written, and we think that Chronicles was, a lot of it was written and edited by Ezra, they were still there. Those who had not been killed were still there, but notice what job they had. Forced labor. They were servants. And that was a prophecy that God spoke to them. What would happen to them? They would be servants. And so you even have here, as predicted, what was predicted in Genesis. And apparently, these people became entrenched in the culture of Israel. We even see evidence of this entrenchment after 70 years of captivity. Judah is taken into captivity. Guess who else is taken into captivity? All those who are living in the land of Judah. Most of the people that are living in the land of Judah. And we see an interesting statement in Ezra. Let's go forward to Ezra chapter 1. Ezra 1 verse 1. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus. And Cyrus is a Persian, and he makes this proclamation in verse 2, that all the kings of the earth the Lord God has given me, and he has commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. So under Cyrus, the Jews returned to Jerusalem under the Persian rule. In chapter 2, we begin to see who these people were. Verse 1 of chapter 2. Now these are the people of the province who came back from the captivity, who had been carried away, who Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. And they came with Zerubbabel and all these other people here, and the number of the men of the people of Israel. And they're all listed here. All the names are listed here. I'm not going to go through all their names. I'd slaughter about 90% of them. I can't pronounce those names. But in that list, notice verse 59. These were the ones who came up from Tel Melah, Tel Harsha, Cherub Aden, and Immer. But they could not identify their father's house or their genealogy, whether they were of Israel. You have a whole group of people who are coming back. They did not know their lineage. They were not part of Israel. One wonders, I'm just putting it out, one wonders if some of these were the descendants of Canaanites, Jebusites. Remember, they were in captivity. You find the total number of retainees or returnees in verse 64. The whole assembly together was 42,300. Besides their male and female servants, of whom there were 7,337. So you got about 42,300, and then you've got servants. Servants who numbered over 7,000. Almost 50,000 people were coming back, including 7,000 servants. The temple was later completed and the people rejoiced. Notice Ezra 9, Ezra 9, verse 1. Ezra 9 and verse 1. When these things were done, the leaders came to me saying, "The people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the lands with respect to the abominations of the Canaanites, Hittites, Perizzites, and Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites." Here was more corruption. Here they had come out of captivity after 70 years. They come back in, they establish Jerusalem as their capital, and then you find that they go out after the abominations of the Canaanites. And it also includes Ammon and Moab, who were the descendants of Lot, and Egypt, of all things. So it shows how quickly people can reject God. If you're influenced by false doctrines. Now, the rest of the story in Ezra does show that the Jews did put away the pagan wives and they dedicated themselves to God. But the question I wonder about, you know, when you see this history here, you just wonder how many Jebusite descendants are still in Judea, or what we would call modern Israel today. Whether some of those peoples are involved in this movement of hatred and are involved in terrorism. We don't know. We don't know exactly where they all come. We can say, yeah, there's some people that we know are involved, but there is something about this. When God said, when you have these peoples that he did not want part of that community at that time, being part of it all the way through, even after the captivity, you're going to have difficulties and problems. There's something else we need to consider all this, and the Jebusites are mentioned one last time over here, and it's a prophecy. Zechariah 9. Zechariah 9 and verse 6. Zechariah 9 and in verse 6. "A mixed race shall settle in Ashdod. I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. I will take the blood from his mouth and the abominations from between his teeth. But he who remains, even he shall be for our God, and shall be like the leader in Judah, and Ekron like a Jebusite." The Philistine, Ekron was a city of Philistia, would be like a Jebusite, or would be like a servant at this particular time. It appears that some of these descendants will be alive at the time of the end, but there is hope here because we see he who remains, even he shall be for our God. Why will people be for God? Because we see what it says in verse 8. I will camp around my house because of the army, because of him who passes by, him who returns. No more shall an oppressor pass through them. Verse 9, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. The reason being is Jesus Christ will be coming and will be established. Now, what does this have to do with us? I mean, what's the relevancy of all this? I mean, this is truly interesting. This is historical things that we could find throughout the Bible. But what does this have to do for us? Let's look at Psalm 56. Psalm 56. And let's start noticing when this was written. It was written by David, and it was called the Silent Dove in Distant Lands. Dove referring to one of peace. It was a title of a song, and it would be a melody, a title of a song with a melody that we don't have here, but it would be the words that we have. A mictum. A mictum here means a style of music or a poem. And notice that this was written when David was captured by the Philistines in Gath. Now, if you want to read more about that story, it's quite interesting in 1 Samuel 21, verse 10 to 15, about when that happened. But notice verse 1, be merciful to me, O God, for man would swallow me up, fighting all day, he oppresses me. My enemies would hound me all day. There are many who fight against me, almost high. Whenever I am afraid, I'll trust in you. In God I will trust his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear. What can flesh do to me? So David is saying that, or asking God to please help him when man would swallow him up or trample him. And whenever he was afraid, he trusted God. And he says in verse 4, I will not fear. What can flesh do to me? And it's repeated in verse 10. I will praise his word. In the Lord I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? And those are questions. And David was in this situation with the Philistines. And it wasn't really a peaceful, safe situation there. I don't know, and we don't know, how many more terrorist attacks are going to happen. I don't know from which groups they will come. But there is something here in these words of David that we need to trust God. And we need to trust the fact that he will watch over us. I mean, they're finding out now that there's a possibility that this latest terrorist attack could have they had a possible plan to take out some, a school. Our kids go to school. And this can happen anywhere. So what David is saying is, look, wherever this is coming from, we've got to trust God. And this is one of the things that we can take away from looking at this whole history. Whatever develops in the future, we've got to trust God for protection. We have to pray for protection as well. It's very important. I want to look at about three more scriptures very quickly. Let's look at a similar scripture in Isaiah 51. Let's look at Isaiah 51 and verse 12. Isaiah 51, in verse 12. I even am he who comforts you. Who are you that you should be afraid of a man who will die, of the son of man who will be made like grass. And you forget the Lord your Maker who stretched out the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth. We can't forget God. It's very important. As it says in verse 15, I am the Lord your God who divided the sea. The Lord of hosts is his name. I have put my words in your mouth. I have covered you with the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens, lay the foundations of the earth, and say to Zion, you are my people. In the future, to which we look, God is going to establish his people in Zion, in Jerusalem. So we can't fear what man will do to us. As it says, you know, who are you afraid of? God has his plan. He's going to establish Zion, Jerusalem, and Israel will be in Jerusalem again. And then in Isaiah 52, verse 1, awake, awake, put on strength, O Zion, put on your beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for the uncircumcised, the unclean shall no longer come to you. No more terror. No more of this type of out-of-the-blue stabbings or bombings that'll take place. There'll only be peace. And that'll be a wonderful time in the future. But before we conclude, let's look at this one encouraging scripture, and this will be the last one, of the words of Jesus Christ in Matthew 15. Matthew 15. Verse 21. Even at the time of Jesus Christ, there were Canaanites. And we see in verse 21, Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region, cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. She's crying out. She's from Canaan, in that area, and Jesus didn't answer her. His disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away. She cries after us. But he said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then she came and worshipped him and said, Lord, help me. Help me. He said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. Notice what he is saying here. It wasn't so much of a derogatory comment, but showing that he was sent to Israel. And notice her response. This is a woman from Canaan. Yes, Lord. Even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. She's recognizing that he is Lord and he is master. And Jesus said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. What this story shows is God's mercy. The mercy of God and of Jesus Christ, that no matter who it is, from whatever background one comes from, if one has faith in God, he will extend mercy. We do pray for God's kingdom to come so that all peoples, whether they be Israelites, whether they be Canaanites or Jebusites, will enjoy the mercy of God and peace that we look forward to come in the world tomorrow.